You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, everyone, and welcome to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Tonight, I am delighted to welcome my old friend, Cliff High, back to the show. By now, just about everyone on the planet has heard of the term WebBot, and everyone knows that Cliff High is the madcap inventor of the WebBot technology. Over the years, he has honed his craft into a precisely imprecise, rickety but accurate time machine that many enjoy following through his Shape of Things to Come reports. You can find the most recent report on his website for the price of a cup of fancy coffee with many more hours of titillation than cream and sugar by going to his site, www.halfpasthuman.com. And I might also add here that there are numerous writings that he has noodled and penciled in, and you can read those free of charge and find a lot of other interesting stuff on his site. However, be forewarned, you might need to offset the disturbing revelations and potential possibilities with a nice warm slice of your favorite pie. So let's welcome the Pie Master back now. Hi, Cliff. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Thank you very much. We've got a good apple pie at the moment.
Oh, my gosh. You're fortunate. I don't have any pie in the fridge. I have to stomach this without pie. But I've got whipped cream in my coffee, so I'm all right. I'm set.
There you go. Okay.
Well, boy, we haven't talked for a little while, and I have your recent report right here on my desk, and there's a lot going on in the world, isn't there?
There sure is, and we're approaching our projected 22 hours of release language on the 8th and into the 9th, which curiously now coincides with the passage of that chunk of rock YU-55, as well as the feds going and turning off all of the communications and causing anxiety and fretting all over.
Wow. You know, I haven't been paying any attention to the news, but those two or three pieces of information, your 22 hours of release language, the 8th and 9th, and the shutoff, all somehow got into my perception. So I think they might be important events. At least they're ones that will be impacting all of us in some way, yes?
Yes. What's real curious for us, of course, is for me personally, is that at the time that we'd ascertained that the release language shifted, way back, about 9 months ago, we had initially drawn out three what I called crashcades, but really it's like three small waterfalls.
Yeah.
Building tension language, falling into release language, then building tension, and then release language, et cetera. And so that was like 9 months ago. Then a few months back, we saw that it had shifted into two. And the third one is sort of like faded away. It's still there in a minor way, but nothing to write home about. But what's really interesting is that essentially the date for the middle one here in November hasn't really changed for a number of months, for perhaps 8 or 9. I'd have to actually go back and look at the records to see. And I didn't have a clue about this rock back then. So nor did I have a clue that there would be the monkeying about with the communication. So I, like everyone else, am rather fascinated when we get these juxtapositions of the notable language shifts and stuff manifesting. It's rather exciting, and it's going to be very interesting to see what they're actually doing, these minions, and I don't believe for an instant that they're doing a quote test.
Right. Well, we know that by the time we get word of it, which is usually right before some major event, and all the propaganda surrounding it, that it's all a pack of lies. So, you know, what's really going on, it'd be nice to be a fly in the wall in one of those underground black operations that they keep running that nobody seems to know too much about. But without knowing that, we do have your reports.
Yeah, they and they are shading towards more and more accurate as we've hit this huge level of immediacy language. We've always known that the immediacy language brought with it a degree of detail that was reliable, unlike the detail found within the shorter and longer term. Mm-hmm. But, of course, it also brings along such a huge mass that picking out meaningful detail becomes a real problem. But we've gotten a little bit better, especially on this last report. And these next few days will be very interesting indeed to see what's going on. There's been all kinds of market chaos at a linguistic level in these last few hours. There was a release relating to the precious metals that came out of COMEX, the commodity exchange, which was later more or less rescinded linguistically. At the same time, other institutions within the precious metals area are doing their own linguistic messing about. So who knows what's going to happen on Monday, but something big is up.
Huh. Well, now, you know, your good friend George Urey, who writes the wonderful Urban Survival column.
And Peoplenomics, yeah.
Yes. Peoplenomics, yes. He has been predicting for years, maybe even decades, that we are in the midst of and will be experiencing a great depression that's even greater than the one that my father lived through. And it was funny because when I was a kid, he used to talk, when I was just about 6 or 7 years old, he used to say that the Bilderbergs own the world. And it's so funny.
Wasn't he correct?
My gosh, yes. Wow.
Yeah, I used to know a few of those old guys that kept trying to yammer on about these strange things that made no sense at all until I, too, was an old guy. And then, boy, those guys were really correct. Too bad
really?
It takes us so long to catch on.
Yeah, boy, that's the layers of brainwashing run deep, don't they?
It's really insidious and it's constant. It's to our credit that we awaken at all,
given the huge
level of pressures on us. You know, the level of subliminals in television is truly phenomenal now. Because I used Vortex for so long, which is my speed reading software, and because it came up through the process of the early monitors where you could actually, as a software programmer, reach into the hardware of the monitor from the OS, drop down into basically assembler or machine language, and institute instructions to the monitor. And so my eyes, I guess, are a little bit trained because of the kind of stuff that my speed reading software went through. I was showing you three words every single time. I was taking advantage of subliminal techniques myself to try and increase your ability to comprehend. The whole idea was that it would boost children's ability to remember and read words because I was so dyslexic myself. I figured, hey, this might help some people.
Yeah.
Ran into all kinds of problems with the school systems and so on, but that's another story. In any event, though, I think my eyes have been well-trained because, let me tell you, there is a lot of stuff in the mainstream television that there's at least one other carrier wave that's pretty continuously, it seems, broadcasting some level of subliminal. Not that I can decode it or anything.
Right,
but I'm aware of it.
Yes, yes. And I think many of us that are starting to tune into, well, let's just say higher frequencies or frequencies that are outside the range of our normal senses are picking this up as well. That's why I completely shut off my television services and canceled anything that I was subscribing to because I could feel and sense the manipulation that was going on. I couldn't figure out what it was and I couldn't see anything, but I knew it was there. And I was born with ads and things being broadcast at me. So I've reached a point of saturation where I can't take in any more of it because it's so toxic.
Sure. I fully understand.
Yeah.
It is indeed a problem. I've got to, for the nature of my work, following linguistics, and some of them, of course, I need to pay attention to the MSM in a very continuous way to watch the shift. So it becomes something of a burden to separate yourself from what you're watching and act as an observer, but necessary.
Right. Well, now let's get back to what people are really dying to know about, maybe on more levels than we know. These crash caves that you're talking about, now we're in this release. We will be in the release period on the 8th and the 9th, and then, of course, as you are aware of, I'm sure, there's a big to-do about the 11-11-11, and whether some of that is meme engineering or some of it is not, whether it's a combination of many different things all working together, I'm not so sure, but it is in a significant date as well. So this is a very crucial, compacted time period. Do you
compacted is the word, compressed.
Or unraveling, maybe. Do you see the final evolution of the revolution of the devolution of the system that we're waiting to collapse? And who's behind all of these collapses? Are the powers that be stimulating these things for their one-world government agenda?
They may indeed be attempting to promote that. I mean, that seems quite clear that the fishhead fellows in the Vatican are trying to foist upon us this reptilian view of a hierarchical structure encompassing the whole world.
Yeah.
Now, and they indeed have coordinated it with the collapse of our financial system. But I maintain that it is not a deliberate collapse so much as the this is as far as they've been able to string it along.
Yeah.
Because of the nature of paper currencies always dying anyway within a certain period of time, they've just been able to keep this one going longer because it was the global reserve. But it's reached the ability of it to continue. Plus, there's that whole mindset shift that's going on among the populace around the planet, which is undeniable. I don't buy ascension. I don't think anybody's going to be gaining wings and flapping off in a rapture or anything.
But
my personal thing is that if the Christians want to go in rapture, please, that's fine. That's great. There's more room for the rest of us. My whole thing here is that there is indeed a shift in awareness of ourselves in relation to the universe that's ongoing that is, to a great extent, unexplainable.
Yeah. Well, you kind of addressed that in your reports in the sections that are titled space gopharts, I believe. Isn't that the word that you used?
Yep.
Yeah, and that covers a multitude of things that you don't have to name then. You don't have to say UFOs or reptilians or grays or higher dimensionals or whatever. Whatever is out there that is creating something that we don't understand is there, right?
It's perceptible, correct.
We just
don't know what it is,
right.
But we know we don't know, and that at least is, I hate to put it this way, something that we do know.
Right.
This is kind of a funny thing. The space gopharts entity is turned upside down relative to the other entities in terms of how the archetypes are derived.
Yeah,
and so we
yeah.
find the broadest possible archetypes in that one, but in something like the populous entities, the closest feeling archetypes are the more powerful, you know, home, hearth, food, that kind of thing, right?
Yeah. And we also know and have verified, and I've heard you talk about this, the coexistence of Civilization One, which has arisen from the, shall we say, the feeding or the food of our own civilization, which has been kept lower than an evolutionary path. We're actually devolving, but we're paying for Civilization One to ascend. And it is now existing simultaneously and yet outside of the perceptual awareness of most humans.
Correct.
And it includes a vast array of super duper califragilistic devices and things that, you know, you might see in Star Trek and think, oh, there's no way that they could have that, but that's exactly what they do have. And
well, the issue there, too, is the overcoming the point of view on they can't have that. You have to understand that all of it hinges on thought. And once you have the correct understanding of the thought, then you get anti-gravity, you get hyperdimensional travel, you get replication technology, you get the ability to deal with metals in a liquid state at room temperature, all different kinds of things from the same technology. So it's not that unbelievable because of the way in which technology has a tendency to magnify itself when you take each and every one of these exponential leaps, as we can show back through history.
Yeah, very good. So how there seems to be a kind of a convergence of potential between these two societies, the one that has been secreted away and kept top secret or beyond top secret, that people die for and are murdered for every day, and the one
they're actually, I mean, if we want to think about it, they're putting a huge amount of our dollars into building a screen to hide the Civilization One. You know, one of the agendas for the chemtrails is literally to mask the sky so we don't see what's on the other side of the chemtrails. And that allows them a certain level of freedom over populated areas that did not exist prior to the chemtrail saturation levels in the year 2000 and onward.
Wow. Interesting. I haven't heard you speak too much about that, and I've had several guests on the show that have been bringing that issue to light, and I was first made aware of them about 10 or 12 years ago, and it's taken me about 10 years to reach the point where I'm actually able to process that information. It's
a rough road. I mean, the most giant, huge conspiracy is the one that takes you the hardest time to grasp.
Yeah,
and this is something that people, real good thinkers like Buckminster Fuller, was running into all of these walls in his early life, in his relationships with people, and he kept wondering, well, why are these people not able to grasp the essential, really cool significance of this thing I've invented, you know, when it was really a cool thing. And it didn't matter what it was, whether it was a Dymaxion car or these special bricks he made that were quake-proof and fireproof and so on.
Right.
It was a conceptual issue. And he discovered that there's a certain, and the way I phrase it is, there's a certain required amount of energy that must be input into your brain for you to be able to process anything.
And
so, for instance, if you want to learn two words of a language, it takes you very little brain energy, maybe, you know, half of a chocolate chip cookie's worth of calories, right? But if you want to learn that whole language, it's going to take you a lot of energy. And, of course, you can't absorb all that energy all at once, or your brain's going to turn into something resembling guacamole. And so you have to spread it out over months and months and months. And the calories consumed are huge. So to learn any language other than your native tongue is going to require you a significant investment of energy. Well, to learn and overcome the change of a point of view that you've spent years, perhaps decades, and have a huge emotional investment in requires an energy transfer. You got to get a certain amount of calories in you to gnaw on that and suck the juice out of those bones before you figure out that, oh, yeah, okay, I can wrap my head around this and it makes sense.
Yeah, very true, very true. And of course, one has to allow for denial and a little bit of ego involved with belief systems, because we cling to belief systems when our belief systems are threatened. And unfortunately, the truth is so strange that it threatens just about all of our belief systems once you start
pretty constantly. That's correct, yes.
Yeah.
It is a really tough thing, and it is the toughest thing on the planet for any human to live as a self-actualizing, self-realizing person. And we can all forgive ourselves for backsliding and saying, hey, I got to just take the afternoon off and chill out.
Yeah, boy.
You know, pie and a nap, right?
Very good. Yeah, very good. So, yeah, so, you know, and plus, you know, once you go down the road of discovering some of these things, it can be a trap in itself, and that is also part of the design of the Matrix.
Part of the design of the Materium, okay?
The way I
schedule things in a non-hierarchical fashion, because I'm not assigning importance or anything, it aids me to think of the universe as a subset of something. Fuzzy set theory, which really is why we run our WebBot stuff, too. It's all set theory. A thing that can be in multiple sets at the same time. But in any event, the materium is just a word I chose to where material reality exists. And within that, we find universe. And then I've noticed a few things about universe when I start thinking about it relative to it being a subset. It allows for the existence of other universes, and it allows for you to noodle about universe and gnaw on it in specific ways without it having to be all-encompassing. And it brings you back to these the idea of the ultimate of the conspiracies and then the changing of the point of view and so on. And this is why, recently having run into the critical thinking movement within the Russian society, that I've become intrigued with the fact, or with the policy, the approach that the establishment scientists in Russia are taking relative to what they're doing. They know they're going to cause a huge upheaval in society by pursuing a critical thinking path. of finding out real things.
Right.
And so, for instance, they find out a real thing, and it takes you a long time to wrap your head around it. They know that's going to have a huge impact on the society, and so they've got other scientists who are thinking about, okay, how do we manage this without destroying ourselves? How do we manage to, you know, grasp the greater productivity that's inherent in these greater thought patterns, and yet not get to the point where people are saying, I just can't handle it anymore, go away, you know?
Right. And as you said, the Russians have been researching a lot of things that are that we have not been able to, we haven't been as exposed to because of the level of control in the United States, I think.
It's phenomenal. They, in essence, have decided that after the 72 years of captivity of their schooling and scientific structures at the hands of the political minions, which they didn't like much, we find ourselves in the same situation.
Right.
And these constraints that have been placed on the academic thought, that they decided to go the other way. And so they were saying, okay, anything is open for discussion as long as you come to it in a, from a rational point, and we can argue the merits of it and not get involved in the discussion at an emotional level. And, but they were even wise enough to say, if we have to become involved at an emotional level, let's also bring the emotions themselves into the discussion in an open and upfront way so that it's all transparent, so that we know why we're getting upset, because maybe why we're getting upset about certain thoughts will tell us things about our thinking process. It gets really involved, but it's a very intricately clear way to proceed. And so, for instance, it's led to just staggering thoughts in other sciences other than they're just the history and the governmental sciences, because they're even examining how we should all, as an organization of beings, coexist. But it's also come into, like, astrophysics, into scalar understanding of the universe, everything from orbital mechanics down to how you would necessarily want to make pencils over time is open to this critical thinking process. And it's all changing. And I think we need to go through that. We haven't had a reformation in our society since the 1830s.
Yeah.
That's a long time to go without a major upheaval that basically throws out the old guard and the old way of thinking to accept the new reality.
Yeah.
One of the new ways of thinking, by the way, is that the it is... I was talking to this astrophysicist in Russia who's involved with, he's a young guy, but he's working for one of the major players over there in this critical thinking area, and it is, they can prove demonstrably both mechanistically with measurements, but also in thought experiments, that we have never, we as the Earth, has never orbited the sun.
Huh.
We don't orbit the sun as we think. The sun
right.
is not a stationary object. This is all, we're all spiraling through it, space in this huge, complex arrangement of barycenters all interacting on each other. And it's in a weird way, it's strange, because we are taught in the West that, you know, the planets orbit around the sun, and basically there's a period with harmonics for each of the planets. We seem to be missing a planet which is filled with the asteroid belt, like it was destroyed, and so on and so on.
Yeah,
we have this basic view of the reality, but it's not... It's a working model. It's not a... And yet we accept it as fact. The Russians are basically saying it's only going to last as long... It's only a fact as long as it can last and support itself as a fact. The minute we can find something that will get rid of it as a fact, then we can go on to discover what is even more true than this thing that was in our way.
Yeah. Makes sense to me.
And this is interesting because, look, if you conceive of the universe, of our solar system, with the sun as basically a stationary object in relative space to to every other thing bigger than itself, then that gives you the impression that you could launch a rocket using very simple mechanics based on a simple orbit and achieve orbit around the moon, which is what caused Wernher von Braun fits when he was running the American space program trying to get us on the moon, because it never worked. Yet the Russians were able to always put something into orbit because they had a different view of reality.
Mm.
And their view of reality knew you had to put these counterintuitive spins on objects. And it's because our whole solar system is like a debris around a comet that itself is spiraling through space. It's not merely going through space in a straight line. It is spiraling, and we're all spiraling around it. And unless you take this into account and know how these spirals work, nothing happens. Now, on the other end of that, it makes astrology more important, and it makes the Mayan calendar more important, and it even explains to a certain extent why the Masons and all these people are really hung up in numerology and specific number-related events, dates, and so on.
Can you elaborate a little bit more on that?
The Mayan astrology is more important because we are not a fixed object in space. In the time, in the 5,000 years, which is relatively small, I grant you, but in the 5,000 years we've been dealing with the current Western astrology, the point in space at which that astrology was invented has long been left in our wake, as the sun is dragging us through space at this huge rate of speed.
Right.
So a couple of things are instantly apparent. That we really are moving relative to the constellations themselves in terms of their background. The movement of the fixed stars is us moving relative to them. This means that the astrology, the idea that we could use pattern matching to create constellations in our brains against which we could plot our own movements, is a staggering leap, because that was the key element of dynamic pattern perception that allows us to navigate on our planet prior to GPS.
Okay,
so it's hugely important, and we didn't really grasp what our minds were providing us with at the time. If you think of it, the Earth as rotating around a relatively stationary star against a relatively stationary star field, everything becomes obvious in terms of how you can navigate relative to stars. But if the stars are changing their relationship to you and each other, apparently as you're moving, you need to develop some very complex. And in this case, we chose the mythological approach of developing an astrology that is also our astronomy in terms of the constellations. If you take the constellations away from our astronomy, we're just cataloging stars and their relative to positions to each other in a meaningless way to those of us on the planet who used to use that for guidance. You know, seafarers and people across deserts and so on. Okay, so there was this. The myth actually becomes very important around the astrology relative to a practical way in which we're dealing with reality. And then the Mayan calendar. The Mayan long count becomes even more important because the history has been distorted relative to our assumption about our sun and how it's moving through space. If, as the Russians, which I now think is quite accurate, if, as they state, the comet is not atypical. It is the model for reality. So everything in space, galaxies, universes, solar systems, and individual bodies that move through space itself must be considered first and foremost as comets. Therefore, we are not in a solar system that is this stationary thing, but we're in sort of like debris rotating around a spiraling bullet through space. And we're a comet, and we're enclosed in its coma, which this is why all of our effort with getting the Voyager satellites away from our solar system and out from our solar system has proven to be so difficult. This is why our scientists had to invent an unknown force that was somehow a repulsive force or a super attractant force or whatever, tugging them back into the solar system. It has nothing to do with that. We didn't have to invent that force at all. What is actually going on is that we're going through a denser medium, and there is a gravity drag on our solar system because of larger objects around our solar system, because we're all in dynamic passage relative to each other in a highly electrically charged or energetic media. And so I'm actually of the opinion now that it will probably be impossible for humans mechanistically to get anything out of the solar system. We'll never be able to generate enough energy. We might get really tricky and find just the one spot on the coma of the sun in which we're all trapped that we could maybe pierce through with the amount of energy we could generate. But millions and millions of tons of explosives, nuclear or otherwise, would not propel a craft out of our solar system. Thus, interstellar space travel by way of Star Trek kind of scooting around on impulse engines, I think is basically impossible. But this also means that the swooping in and picking up of things like Venus is just how these solar systems grow.
And so the
Mayans were quite correct. In their lifetime, in their experience, Venus was trapped and became a planet. It also projects certain things relative to the progression of the equinox, and it also projects certain things relative to that cycle and the solar cycles, which now become even more important because something external to the sun was noticed by the Russians when they put a couple of satellites in these things called Lagrange points. Mm-hmm. Lagrange points are used to create the stereo effect that we see in our SOHO imaging of the sun, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's these particular points around the orbit of the Earth that balance out the Earth's orbit, and the gravities all sort of like play together and the satellites will sort of stay put. It's a way of making a solar stationary satellite, if you will. Like a geostationary one that we get our TV and stuff from. Anyway, the Russians did this, and they discovered this thing that they called the heliosphere. And then there was another thing they called the heliopause. And the heliosphere is a buffering wind around our solar system that is measurable. And it's grown in the time the Russians have been measuring it.
Hmm.
And it's very much like the air being shoved ahead of a jet. As the jet goes faster and faster and faster, it creates a denser and denser layer of air around it. And that air on the front of the jets is visible to the pilots in this dense layer that goes around jet airplanes. And if they were to go fast enough, of course, they break the sound barrier, which is basically crashing through that dense layer of air.
Hmm.
And there's something like that that is affecting our solar system and currently agitating our sun. So maybe the Mayans' long count is even more important because they may have gone through 5,115 years ago a similar conditioning in space, and these may be regular bands that our solar system passes through.
Huh, interesting. And, of course, we're poised to go through many of these shift points or phase shift points. Somewhere around 2012, if I'm not in the window of 2012.
The Russians think we've already begun. They think we hit they know for a fact that the heliosphere increased over 400 times, 400% density over a period of less than 13 years. Coincidentally, the number 13 coming up and the Mayans being all hung up on that. And the 13-year period of time of this increase in the densification of it, was quasi-predicted. There was a Russian scientist who was thinking about all of this, and he said, well, if I'm right, then the solar system is moving through a fluid-like level of energy that will have dense and light areas, very much like the spiral arms of the galaxy, the Milky Way, that we're being absorbed by. And that basically what we're seeing, what we're going through, are unseen, because it's not light energy and it's not electromagnetism that we can stick our
we can't measure it.
We can't get out there and measure the stuff, but
right.
we feel the impacts of it, and
right.
we can measure it with highly sensitive instruments. And basically we're going through waves that are connected to the spiral arms of the Milky Way galaxy as it absorbs the solar system we're in.
Wow. Well,
and unfortunately, though, we got to be real clear about this. In the early 1900s and way back in the early 1800s, there were two groups of movements in humans that studied the relationship of the solar winds, if you will, the sunspots, etc., to human activity over time, and they noticed that when things get really hot on the sun relative to sunspots, etc., not only do we have the bad weather, but we also have humans going crazy, mega wars, all different kinds of things, as our social pressures are increased by actual electromagnetic or energetic, if you will, pressures on the human brain. Now, in our personal work with the data, way back in 97, I got this data that said sun disease, and I'm now quite convinced that that was an extremely wide meme that included not only disease of the sun in the sense of sunspots,
right.
but also the impact of the sun's disease on human brains. We've had a lot of data saying that we would reach a point where people would be found just like they'd be walking along and they'd, you know, get hit by this stuff and just drool, stand there drooling.
Well, they're almost doing that now, are they?
Well, there is that, yes.
I mean, if you
I'm saying in mass. I mean, to the point where it'll hit the mainstream media, and they'll start showing pictures of people that will block traffic, this kind of thing.
Yeah, well, of course. And if your reports are as accurate as they seem to be, then it would seem that we are headed for some pretty strange zombie-like movements all across the planet. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Which is why I was a little freaked out to find out that the CDC was messing around with zombie apocalypse kind of memes.
Oh yes, yes. And what was that all about?
I don't know. And it's very disturbing to see those kind of manifestations of the linguistics from way outliers like that.
Yeah, yeah. Now, this, of course, they're not the those who are involved with the control of things. You have a certain word for that, and I can't. The minions.
Yeah, sure. No, the minions are the group between us and the powers that be. Correct.
Right, right. Now they're not necessarily shielded from all this stuff either, because they're being used to implement the outer layers of things.
So, correct. Basically, they're all either easily controllable through blackmail or other means, or mind control or so on, or they're sort of stupid.
Right. Right. Yes. Well, and then so they're subject to all of this as well, and the powers that be must know that this is all coming down. How do you see this playing out? Are there several different potential paths? Obviously, there are, since each one of us has some kind of choice in this thing.
The data suggests that the powers that be are content with the idea that they can squirrel themselves away in the most radiation absorbative material around, which is dirt. In the sense that they get these underground hidey holes,
Filling
with cement, TV and champagne, presumably, or whatever else they might need.
Yeah.
The data is less. We've known that for some time that this was their plan. The data is less supportive of that as a working option, in the sense that it makes more sense from the data viewpoint to think of this as being more than mere radiation from the sun causing strange mob action and so forth, because we're likely to have, and in fact will have, huge levels of increases of subterranean problems such as earthquakes, etc. So
right.
That seems to be less of a desirable option than they may think. I think a lot of them are going to end up entombed in their bunkers.
Well, and then there I've heard some internet chatter about some of those bunkers being destroyed, either accidentally or through some kind of harp ray type thing or energy weaponry. That there's a lot of mysterious explosions going on underground where these bunkers would have been or are.
I don't know whether you should accept any of that kind of information. The whole world at the moment, the whole planet is filled with such levels of disinfo.
You're right.
That I'm not willing to accept anything, especially
now
that
I'm
doing the critical path thing.
Yeah. I agree
because
with
the Russians have actually developed a methodology, and I'm increasing my ability to read Russian, and so I'm getting more into it. But it brings some thoughts to you. It's like, okay, it doesn't aid me to think that one way or another.
It
may make me feel good, but it's going to obscure my actual critical thinking, because maybe it's not true, and I really need to know that for later on, right?
Exactly. Thank you for bringing me back to reality. What about the potential for, we know that there is technology involved here that might allow for phasing out and in of various time portals, and you talk somewhere.
I've never bought that idea. I don't think time can be overcome. I don't think that we can corporeally shift any human or any object through time. I know they've done teleportation, and I know that Anderson et al., especially now with the recent stuff coming out of the leaking out of what the Hindus are doing up there near Kashmir, I know that they've been able to really do the magnetic containment fields well, but these have to be considered to be sieves, selective filters, rather than the ability to travel or shift in time at all. And basically what they do, you have to consider that what they're doing in the time technology is that they're surrounding these humans with their test equipment with a magnetic containment field that screens out electromagnetic radiation at a fantastic level, but will allow certain components of that radiation, including time, to be selectively filtered. Yet when they pop those bubbles and allow those people back out, they have not traveled in time. They have merely had less time or more time exposed to them while in those bubbles. They're still in this year. They haven't shifted at all. Makes
okay.
sense?
All right. Yeah, it does make sense.
Okay, now that is the reality of the state of time exploration as we're able to determine it by data mining through the Internet. There's probably vast quantities of stuff I don't know about relative to how they're doing time activities, but the published and discussion level of time activity engineering seems to support my view that physical corporeal time travel is not possible.
Well, okay. Now, what about the work that Andra Bajago brought forth about it's not time travel, it's simply shifting from one place in time to another place. So, for example, if you were to be shifted from this planet to an underground base on Mars, your body would at one moment be there, here, and then another moment be elsewhere.
So correct. I agree with
okay.
that. Okay. I
can
see where the teleportation is bilocation is doable.
Okay.
But then, that does not involve time per se.
Right.
Time
right.
is one of 66,000 attributes that exist within the materium.
Okay.
And you can screen it out and so on, but you can't overcome it. You can't eliminate it and jump ahead of it or selectively go to another year. You have to imagine it this way. I am conscious at this moment. I'm conscious, you're conscious, the planet's conscious, all of reality is conscious, right? But we're all focused now. Our consciousness, the greater gigantic consciousness that is reality, is not focused on 1855. If it were, we would be living in 1855.
Right.
So consciousness is not spread out on all times, everywhere, continuously. It
right.
may be so from a philosophical viewpoint, everywhere at all times, but it is not so continuously. And so in order to shift into time, you would have to transfer your consciousness as well as your consciousness is basically really all you would have to shift, because the physical corporeality that is you is really an illusion.
Right.
However,
right.
your consciousness is a subset of the greater consciousness, and if it's looking at now and not 1855, you're never getting to 1855.
Uh-huh. Well, of course, then that would lead to the work of Carlos Castaneda in shifting the perception point of the consciousness.
Now, that is perhaps doable at a different level than we actually talk about. But getting back to Andrew's stuff, right?
Right, right.
I'm not disputing that Andrew has his perception of how things came about in his life and the time
right.
travel experiments and so on.
Right.
However, the Russians are sure disputing that, because they're saying that, you know, there, and actually all the critical thinking is, because there are certain things within time that bring into question the idea that we will even be able to get imagery or any residuals of time, because of the way that consciousness must work within the reality in which we're at. But Andrew's supposition or the evidence that he's brought forth on some of these things is now spurious and is put into doubt simply because he relies on the consensual history, which we know to be bogus.
Right, right. Well,
so he said he was once, you know, a viewer of a movie of the Crucifixion of Christ. This is the same problem that Major Ed Dames now has. He has to understand that he may indeed, from the remote viewing, he has less issues than Andrew does. Andrew's visions, you know, having seen a movie of this, it's like, well, if everybody is wearing medieval costumes, then, you know, you'd have a much better place to stand on.
Yeah.
But as of this point, the whole mythology around Christ, etc., and the crucifixion has to be considered to be, at best, alleged in any given year. And therefore, the best evidence seems to put it into, you know, would put it into the medieval time around specific individuals. But you'd have to have everybody in medieval costume, et cetera, in order for that to be believable. And yet, you don't hear those references from people that are making these claims about having had time travel experiments or experiences.
Huh.
We don't hear it with channelers either. All the channelers are quite capable of standing up and saying, no, that's all bogus. I channeled this, and it all happened in 1302 or something. And we don't ever hear any of that. They are accepting within the framework of their mind the common consensual history, which frames their view of everything.
Yeah. And that could be, I'm not so certain that has reality to it, other than the person's own references to it.
I agree.
Okay.
But because we have the common consensual view of reality, and
right.
people have experiences, they will frame them within those experiences.
Right.
So this
exactly.
is like the near-death business, right?
Yeah.
I'm quite convinced that near-death experiences are 100% valid and also 100% misunderstood.
Yeah.
And it's because you exist simultaneously as this little subset of consciousness within the materium and
right.
a larger set of consciousness outside of materium.
Right.
As does
right.
everybody you know. So when you die and you go out there in a near-death experience, of course you see all these people that you think are dead because you're seeing their greater expression of consciousness out there, so
right.
to speak. And you come back here and you think, I've been talking to the dead.
Well, right.
that's not quite that, because the small amount of consciousness that they had in this materium has gone on to reincarnate elsewhere.
Right,
and
exactly.
really couldn't be bothered with you because it was messing about with some pine.
Yes, I agree with that. I think that's a much much more accurate perception of things. Now, that brings us to a question that somebody has. I'm kind of trying to segue into this, and this has to do with something that you have been talking about for some time now, and that is the data gaps. Now, there's a couple of different data gaps I'm referring to. One is that certain people seem to have disappeared, and then they return at a certain point. Okay, so that's one of them. And the other is a complete loss of data at a certain point in the web bots, and then the data begins again. So the questions... The question that was asked today is about that data gap. What do you see as the cause of that? And
we have a little bit more understanding on that now because
I was able
to do some tweaking around. Because it's the reason we're having longer and longer periods of time between reports has to do exactly with the situation relative to the data gap. We are, for whatever reason, and we can put this into the unknown category, experiencing. Collectively as a human species, and an outrushing of more and more language in what we used to call here at Half Past Human the immediacy value set, or what we still refer to it in that. But so the immediacy data has been rising exponentially relative to the shorter term and the longer term data. Now, we can run our system in either serendipitous mode, which is 99% of the time I run it that way, or deterministic mode. Our serendipitous mode pretty much just allowed the spiders to bring back the data as they'd always found the data.
Uh-huh.
And over time, I had noticed there was from like 1997 until 2004 or 5, I'd noticed a relationship that pretty much held steady. It varied a little bit, but not very much, between the immediacy data, short-term and long-term data. That started changing around 2004, 2005, and it took me a while to grasp what was going on. And basically, the problems we had were actually dropping off longer-term and shorter-term data types due to the flood of immediacy data.
Wow.
Now, this does not augur well for us humans. It is as though there is a huge emotional pressure wave pushing more immediacy data out of us as we go forward into these next couple of years.
Wow.
That's fundamentally what we appear to, and this is an apparent, this is a description in words of an ambiguous nature of an understanding that is less than precise to begin with, because we're trying to figure out a lot of this stuff as we go along.
Right.
But my best understanding at the moment is that we've been flooded with the immediacy data, and I can, by selectively altering the spiders and the data collection patterns, allow more short-term data and longer-term data to come through, but there is a noticeable apophasy of it, as though our minds are shoving out so much immediacy data that they are not actually generating as much shorter-term and longer-term for us to find. Make any sense at all?
Yeah, it does. If I don't think about it and just kind of be with it.
Okay. It hurts to think about it. It hurts to do it, let me tell you. You come away with headaches sometimes. But basically, this is the deal with that.
Yeah.
It is my thinking now that we will pass through something that will be psychically disturbing to the human species over these next couple of years, but not necessarily going to be physically a catastrophe or something. I don't know what it is, but I do know that at the unknown level, it has shifted the immediacy ratios and continues to do that at such a level that I can say we're really close and we're probably in it already.
Okay. So from this point forward, we're really in the thick of things in the terms of the energetic shifts that are here right now, whatever is causing them.
Correct. And we're going to go through the shorter term, 22 hours is probably the minimum it will last, and we can be off by up to about 3 days because we're dealing with the immediacy values, and they have a three-day error rate. Okay, the shorter term values can be off by up to 3 months.
Wow.
Longer term can be off by up to 1.9 years, which is their entire range. But the immediacy data are showing this 22-hour release language thing that we've got coming up on the 8th and the 9th. However, if we were totally off by 3 days and it spanned 3 days, it would go from the 8th to the 11th. Again, probably not a good sign because the powers that be are all hung up on numbers. Then we're going to get into building tension language that will take us all the way through to March, except for a little tiny hiccup on December 2nd, 3rd, which is where the other of the third crash cage used to be that seemed to have been propelled forward to this one in November. Okay, the data that was in the December 2nd and 3rd immediacy data crash in terms of release language was propelled forward into November, so we got a longer, a bigger rise in November and a steeper drop. But then we're rising generally all the way into March, and then we go in from March, we go into release language, and we don't see any sign that it ends.
Wow. Wow. So as of March 2012.
Correct.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. You're hearing it here first, folks. This is history in the making. We're in it, you know.
We are, yeah.
This is so
and we'll,
strange.
We'll build up until March, so whatever is going to occur between now and then will be, let's just say, the last of normal. And it's not. And insofar as I'm showing with our data, the whole December thing of 2012, for us, the real dramatic part of it all is going to be in March. By the time we get to December, we will have been in it since March.
Wow. interesting.
It's scary to me, you know.
I've got to
get my boat done quick.
Well, you know, I'm not so worried about the physical part of it because I've been working on releasing that in my own personal life. As far as, you know, being concerned about life and death and food and water and the rest of
sure,
it.
Sure, sure, exactly.
But
same here, yeah, yeah.
The psychic shifts and the how this is all going to play out in terms of the suppression of information and the illusion that's being propped up in front of us and how that's going to be...
How it is breaking down now.
Yes, it does seem to be. And, you know, I can say honestly that I want more than anything for the control paradigm to be dissolved.
I agree.
I mean,
and if I can live long enough to see that, and then that is truly one of those satisfying moments. I'll be able to die in a state of shibumi. You know, all will have been perfect.
Absolutely right. So I kind of live for that. You know, I have to hang around long enough to see that happen and to know unequivocally, without a shadow of a doubt, at the deepest core of my being, that this has happened, and humans are finally free at last.
Until they screw it up again.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, we will.
There is that, right, right.
That's what we like to do.
However,
at least
I think
we might have a second or two, a couple thousand years.
But
of
this time, I think we've got a really good shot at it. You know,
there's
so much that's opening up now to question. The critical thinking movement will sweep out of Russia. It's already starting to have inroads into China and into Chinese thinking. And
I'm reading about it
in India.
As
soon as we get hold of it, boy, and it's gone around the planet,
Yeah, it seems like the United States has been, it started out as a seed thought or a meme of consciousness, and then we got kind of derailed and, you know, sheepalized. But
it must be this way, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Everything
the Chinese,
happened.
the whole thing, right. Way back when they caught on to it. I mean, everybody does, and then you forget about it. It's all cyclical.
Right.
You know, you got to be an old tree.
Like
you don't get to be an old tree unless you go through all the sapling stage of that business, right?
Right. So it does seem like this consciousness or this awareness is returning to us, and once we get a hold of it and grasp it and really understand it, there's nothing like our the wonderful tenacity of the human spirit to rise up from the ashes and to really shine brightly. And that is what I believe in, that we are doing that, and this is what will happen. And we'll shed off the darkness and the illusion and the
control.
Oh,
I think so as well. You know, the thing that I really like about humans is that there's a lot of us that love to work.
Yeah,
it's just cool as hell to build things.
It is.
And, you know, it's kind of like, okay, get out of my way, you know.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much fun to be had on this planet. If we could just, you know, get a little bit of grasp on the economics that have been derailed for so long with the quadrillions.
I think we need to. I think we've actually. There was listening to this guy who's a Serbian. I think he's a philosopher, and he's really a marvelous fellow, a great thinker. There's a couple of videos out. If I can find a link to him, I'll put it up there. But he's got an idea that makes a lot of sense. That capitalism, like communism, like socialism, like fascism, has lost its claim to legitimacy with the what I've been calling the Pluto or this generation that's on the point now with the Occupy and so forth, the generation from 89 onward. And these guys have no emotional acceptance of capitalism as a good thing because they've been oppressed by it all their lives. And so whatever we do come up with, I don't think it'll be the predatory capitalism, at least not for several hundred years, that we've gone through. But we need something radically different. The time that we could go through reformation and reform things, that is to reshape them, has changed. Now we need destruction that we may take the parts and rebuild with a new understanding.
Yes, beautiful. Very well said. And I agree totally that all of these old thought forms that people seem to keep wanting to reinvent, I think it's better to just clear your mind and start with a clean slate. And start with critical thinking first, as you suggest, and learn how to think, because that's an acquired process. It's not something that happens.
It's a skill,
It is, really. You have to intentionally work at it. And so to recreate something is not necessarily a good thing, but we can certainly synergize a little bit, and we can start from scratch and come up with something entirely new that hasn't been done before.
And so, be that much more efficient as well, because we have a new understanding of things.
Yeah.
That's just marvelous, the way that our progression of intelligence does, as Kalman says, you know, mount up certain plateaus. And we've gone through one level of plateau, and I think this new level of energy will give us the ability to think about things entirely differently, such that we won't have to make a lot of the mistakes that we used to have to make in terms of stepwise engineering. And I've seen it in the development of just the software engine industry in my lifetime, and what was known as best practices and protocols that we used to have to operate under, and the new paradigms that we're programming under now. There's many things that we're going to have to watch out for, but we have a truly marvelous opportunity at the moment. Now what we have to do is we got to get our relationship settled with the Civilization One fellows and tell them we understand they've been parasitical, they need not be in the future, and that we understand that they've been right royal bastards, and we don't have to allow that to get in between us in our relationship, but things are not going to be as they would have it.
Exactly. Beautifully said. And Cliff, we only have a few minutes left, so I'd like to turn the last couple of minutes over to you just to share anything that you'd like to share with the listeners at this time, which is such a historic and propitious moment, and then let us know where we can find your reports and writings and so on.
Well, I don't know that any of my crew is pertinent at the moment. You know, you're gonna you got to Google stuff, but at the moment, what I'm really interested in is these upcoming couple of weeks, because we're going to see huge levels of thrashing around that will result, or that will be the direct result of the old order reaching this next critical stage in its rigor mortis. The way I'm conceiving of it is that I'm standing there like a Hollywood guy, like Harold Lloyd or, you know, Charlie Chaplin,
yeah.
and the front of the bar is falling, and I'm standing at just the right point so that the open window will pass over me and the bar will crash around me, right?
Yeah.
And that's basically what we've got. We've got all these drunk bastards behind us that have pushed the face of the bar out into the street, and it's coming down. Now, it's doing so in a rigor mortis fashion, but as it's falling, over these next few weeks, we're going to see them try to do everything they can to prop it up. And it may mean huge levels of gyrations in the fiscal system as the financials come unraveled.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I always keep telling people is you can be calm about this because most of us don't have a stake in the 1% game anyway.
Right.
Okay, and let it all die, and
yep.
guess what? Not a single apple has disappeared from this planet.
That's
Not
right.
Not a single resource is gone. It is
That's
all
right.
an illusion.
Yes.
And all we have to do is get our brooms out, sweep it all up, put it in a nice pile, put these people back into an educational institution, not a school.
Right.
Educate them so that they can, you know, find useful ways to be human, and then get on with things.
Well, they could
and
take
let's
the
go
apples
find those
and
people
pie.
With the machines and get this anti-gravity and the replicators and
exactly.
all the Star Trek-y stuff.
Exactly. Wow. Well, Cliff, thank you so much for coming back tonight.
Anytime, guys. I've been remiss. It's very difficult for me to be other than a private person.
But there are individuals
like you that I've got this big key connection with I need to maintain. So we'll
exactly.
do it more frequently.
Well, thanks again, Cliff, and I will be thinking about you over the next couple of weeks. And not blaming, but just thanking you for sharing.
No, you can go ahead. There are going to be a lot of people doing that.
And we'll be running to the store to get apples to bake pie.
There you go. Good deal.
All right.
Talk to you later.
All righty. Good night, everybody.